The first case for argument is Wilson versus United States. Ms. Barghese.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Shiny Varghese, and I am here on behalf of the petitioner-appellant, Eric Wilson. This appeal arises from the District Court's denial of Mr. Wilson's pro se petition pursuant to 28 U.S.C. Section 2255. On appeal, we raise two issues for review. The first, certified by this Court, is whether Mr. Wilson received ineffective assistance of counsel when his trial counsel failed to argue that Mr. Wilson could not be held liable as a co-conspirator for acts committed in furtherance of the conspiracy prior to the time he joined the conspiracy. Mr. Wilson also requested that this Court expand the certificate of appealability to consider a second issue, that Mr. Wilson's Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights were violated when the trial judge, rather than the jury, made findings of fact using a preponderance of the evidence standard rather than a beyond the reasonable doubt standard, and relied on those findings in sentencing Mr. Wilson to a term exceeding that permitted by the jury's verdict alone. On the first issue, Mr. Wilson's right to the effective assistance of counsel was violated because he was prejudiced by his counsel's deficient performance in failing to make the argument to the jury that Mr. Wilson could not be held liable for acts of his co-conspirators that were conducted before he engaged in the before he allegedly engaged in the conspiracy.
But wouldn't that amount to confessing to being a member of the conspiracy?
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
That's the way you put it, right?
Not necessarily.
Mentioned as co-conspirators, so.
Alleged co-conspirators, Your Honor. We would argue that the argument that Mr. Wilson was not a member of the conspiracy.
Has any court ever said that a lawyer is obliged by the Sixth Amendment to make an inconsistent defense? Because that's what this is. He says, first, I'm not a member of the conspiracy at all. And second, if I am, I joined it on date X. That's an inconsistent defense. So my question is, has any court ever said that lawyers are obliged to make inconsistent defenses?
Respectfully, Your Honor, we would disagree that it's an inconsistent argument.
Just
that
answer my question.
No,
has any court ever so held?
No. However, we would also state that there is no inconsistency to the argument that the government did not prove its case that Mr. Wilson was a member of the conspiracy, but to also argue that if the jury did...
Do you think it would be an inconsistent defense to say the government didn't prove its case, I didn't buy any drugs, but if I did, I was entrapped?
I think that you can have in the alternative argument, and they may be inconsistent, but you can still make the argument in persuading the jury that even if they did find there was evidence that Mr. Wilson at some point in time during the 25-year...
I didn't shoot her, but if I did, she had it coming. That's
I don't think that's the same. That's the same argument. In that, if
well, can you imagine presenting to a jury an argument that I didn't do it, but if I did, I'm not responsible for anything that happened with the rest of those guys prior to this.
Your Honor, I can't imagine making that argument at all. But in this case, I would say that trial counsel's responsibility, given the vast scope of the investigation that the government had against the Gangster Disciples organization, the fact that he was being tried with seven of the other defendants.
Now, I could see him making an election.
I'm sorry?
I could see him making an election as between which of the two arguments he's going to make, but I can't see how he could do them both.
One example to demonstrate how he could do both is the case of Sherman Moore, one of the defendants who was also tried and convicted along with Mr. Wilson. Trial counsel for Sherman Moore made the argument that Mr. Moore was not, the evidence did not prove that Mr. Moore was a member of the conspiracy at all, at any time, but that admitting that there was evidence that Mr. Moore had been stripped of the rank of governor, which was a sort of a higher level within the Gangster Disciple organization, at a point in, late 1993, that if the jury did believe that evidence, if the jury believed that he was a member of the conspiracy at some point, that the evidence also showed that he was stripped of his rank of governor in late 1993, that they should not hold him liable for the substantive offenses past that date. And in fact, what the jury did was convict him of the substantive counts prior to that date, but acquitted him of those counts after that date that he was supposedly stripped of his rank of governor. So in that case, the trial counsel...
Well, that argument isn't totally inconsistent. I mean, in civil cases, they frequently contest liability, absolutely, and also contest the amount of the damages. They say, we're not responsible, but if we are, not for that much money. And that makes sense, but the one you're describing, I have a hard time finding some real good predicate for. Why would I, if I was a lawyer, would I have done that? The answer is no. That would make me incompetent under your rule.
In this case, I don't believe it would have, because you could make the argument the government didn't prove its case that Mr. Wilson was a member of the conspiracy, but in the alternative, given the fact that there was, admittedly, a tremendous amount of evidence against the narcotics conspiracy as a whole.
That's just what leads us to think that you're denying that there is such a thing as an inconsistent defense. In my example, I didn't do it equals the government didn't prove that I bought any drugs. But if you don't agree with that, I was entrapped. Now, that's usually the prototype of an inconsistent defense, because you can't be entrapped without admitting that you did the events. You seem to be saying that as long as you just assert that the government didn't carry its burden of proof, there's no such thing as an inconsistent defense, and lawyers, therefore, should be making them routinely, should routinely be arguing, indeed are ethically, constitutionally obliged to argue, A, the government didn't prove its case, and B, if it did, the crime occurred in the following way, which is exculpatory, or not as bad as one might think. And my understanding is that most criminal defense lawyers think that that's the equivalent of a guilty plea.
The slow guilty plea obliges
lawyers to do that.
We're not saying that it obliges lawyers to do that, but given the circumstances of this particular case, and
you are saying that it obliges lawyers to do that. That's the sole reason you are here.
What we are saying is that trial counsel should have made this argument, given that Mr. Wilson's liability for all of the other counts, other than the conspiracy and CCE counts, were based solely on co-conspirator liability. There was no allegation of any direct conduct by Mr. Wilson for any of those acts.
Save a penny's worth of rebuttal if you want.
I will. What we would argue is that the trial counsel should have made that argument based on the evidence that was submitted by the government. By just simply saying, if at any point you believe that he was a part of the conspiracy, if you believe that at all, there's certainly evidence that suggests that, you could still make the argument that the substantive offenses, a vast majority of which occurred prior to the time he was made governor, allegedly made governor of the Gangster Disciples. And the theory propounded by the government during trial and during closing argument was that the four defendants who were being held liable for the substantive offenses where there was no direct conduct alleged was because they were so-called governors within the hierarchy of the Gangster Disciples. By simply making the argument that there was no evidence that Mr. Wilson was a governor in the Gangster Disciples prior to 1995, I don't believe that that's an inconsistent argument with saying that he was never part of the conspiracy as a whole. It's simply admitting that there is testimony to suggest that, and if you believe that, at least understand that the timing question is a critical one for demonstrating that he was not part of the substantive, he did not commit any of these substantive offenses, and the only way he gets there is through this Pinkerton liability theory. And furthermore, with respect to the ineffective assistance claim, we would also argue that there is certainly prejudice demonstrated by counsel's deficient performance, in that the prejudice, you could see it with respect to Mr. Moore's counsel's argument, that if trial counsel had made this argument, and in the alternative argument, there would have been a reasonable probability that counsel would have succeeded in persuading the jury that Mr. Wilson could not have been held liable for these substantive offenses through co-conspirator liability. Finally, we would also state that it's difficult to know at this early stage whether the omission that trial counsel made was based solely on trial counsel's strategy, and we would suggest that an evidentiary hearing upon remand would enable us to do that. I see that my time is limited, so I will stop unless
okay,
I have further
you,
questions.
Thank you, Ms. Varghese. Mr. Rao?
May it please the court, counsel, My name is Praveen Rao. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney, and I'm here on behalf of the United States. The district court did not err in denying petitioner's Section 2255 motion based on ineffective assistance of counsel. As this court has pointed out, and the district court found it to be a logical, tactical reason for what counsel did was he attacked the entire conspiracy. The entire thrust of his argument, as the district court pointed out, was that petitioner was not involved in a drug conspiracy with the gangster disciples at any time. As this court has pointed out today, arguing otherwise would be confessing to the conspiracy while maybe challenging the substantive counts, and that would be inconsistent. And as this court has pointed out, it would be equivalent to a guilty plea. There is no obligation by defense counsel to argue the substantive counts while foregoing the conspiracy. As to the fact of the co-defendant Moore, the fact that he was stripped of governor, there's no evidence that defendant Wilson had the same facts. In fact, he was a coordinator as far back as 1992 and 93, 94. He was a regent, and then he was elevated to a governor. He was a member of the conspiracy the entire time, and trial counsel's arguments were focused on that. He was going for broke. If he had been found not guilty,
of course, that raises the question whether the ineffective assistance didn't lie in going for broke. If your client's obviously guilty, why do you just stand up and deny everything rather than try to minimize the extent of liability?
As far as the substantive counts, the counts 5 through 40...
Of course, that's not the argument now being made, but
yes,
might be a more substantial argument.
That is correct, Judge, but trial counsel had very little to work with as far as the substantive counts goes. Counts 14 through 40 started from January 95 through June 95 when petitioner was a governor. So that's half the counts right there. And trial counsel's conduct did not prejudice the petitioner because even if he had argued that he was not a member of the conspiracy during those time periods, all the evidence there showed he was, and he would have found guilty on those substantive counts. Unless there's any questions on the second issue, the government would stand on its brief and refer to the McReynolds decision, which holds that petitioners are not afforded any relief in a collateral proceeding on collateral review, and the United States would ask that this court affirm the district court's decision and deny petitioner's motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. Mr. Barghezi, how much time does she have? 1 minute? Do you have anything further?
How much time?
1 minute.
1 minute. You may fire when ready.
Your Honors, although the government argues that Mr. Wilson, that the evidence demonstrated conclusively that Mr. Wilson was a member, was a coordinator, was a regent, we would argue that the evidence is not conclusive in that respect. With the total of 30 witnesses that were presented at trial, only 5 had anything at all to say with respect to Mr. Wilson's alleged involvement in the Gangster Disciples organization.
One would be enough, wouldn't it?
I'm sorry?
One would be enough.
One would be enough, but they presented 3 witnesses who have made inconsistent statements as to the time that he was involved as a coordinator. And given that there's inconsistent and limited testimony, it was incumbent upon trial counsel to make the argument during his closing that there was no way that he could have been governor prior to 1995 at a minimum. That's the evidence that was presented at trial, and that he could not have been held liable for those substantive counts occurring after he would have allegedly entered the conspiracy. For these reasons, we ask the court to grant the motion.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Borghese. And you were appointed, were you not? The court thanks you for your efforts.
Indeed. Thank you.